Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Usually, elections are about who's going to win. I know that seems obvious, but it is worth noting because we have a really interesting situation unfolding with the preliminary election for Boston mayor. According to two polls over the last few days, it looks like this may actually be a race for second. So let's try to make sense of those polls ahead of Thursday's debate, which Radio Boston and WBUR are co-hosting with WCVB, the Boston Globe, and the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston. Here to help us do that, Steve Cazella, president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group. Steve is a friend of the show, and Mass Inc. Polling conducted one of the polls with Policy for Progress, New Democracy Coalition, Housing Forward Massachusetts, and Education Reform Now Advocacy. Steve, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Glad to be here.
So lots of new information in the last few days, Steve. Your polling data came out Friday. Then the Globe Suffolk University poll released today. Both have City Councilmember Michelle Wu polling at around 30%. They also have this cluster of Acting Mayor Kim Janey and Councilmembers Anissa Sibey-George, Andrea Campbell, really tight together for second. So first question, does it mean that Wu has her place in this preliminary election solidly in hand?
Well, I think nothing's solid until everything's over. You know, that's one thing. I mean, just a fact about municipal elections is that they can change much more quickly than, say, a partisan election. You know, there's no Republican, there's no Democrat on the ballot. There's no kind of mental shortcut people can take to where there's only one candidate that's anywhere near my, as a voter, my ideological space. So I'm definitely going to choose this one. You know, in municipal elections, there might be three or four candidates that you're still choosing between. So, you know, certainly you would like to be Michelle Wu and you'd like to be Michelle Wu's campaign, given the numbers that are the way they are. But I certainly wouldn't say, you know, there's no way that anything else could happen.
All right, let's look at these two clusters now. So Globe Suffolk has Janey, Sibey-George, and Campbell at 20%, 19%, and 18%. Your poll last week had them at 15, 13, and 11, respectively. The polls have margins of error in the 4 to 5% range. Does that essentially mean they are in a dead heat?
I think yes. And I think for a couple interesting reasons. One is that our poll tried to look at a few different turnout scenarios, and who is in second really depends a lot on turnout or will be really affected by turnout. So we basically started with a very wide net and then narrowed it down to, okay, well, what if it was just really strong voters with a really strong vote history? What if it was only people who have participated in past municipal elections, for instance? And depending on kind of what you do there, it shows a very different picture. So if it's only the most reliable voters, for instance, Anissa Sibey-George does much better than if it's a higher turnout election. If it's a very high turnout election, Kim Janey does very well. So who turns out really does kind of make a big difference. But the commonality that these two polls have and a commonality that they share with one that was released by Emerson at the end of August is, yes, it's Michelle Wu in first and then this cluster in second, really too close to say, you know, who's in the lead in this race for second. There's too many undecideds. Okay. Turnout's too uncertain.
Yeah, so that's what's fascinating to me about this in watching this, is you've got the question of turnout, you know, so people can answer polls, so that's one thing. Going to the polls and voting is something else. And then you have this undecided number, which seems to be shrinking. Today's poll suggests that there are only about 8% of voters polled are undecided. Is it, you know, is it a two-pronged strategy? If you're the ground game for the candidates who are clustered together, are you trying to move undecideds or are you trying to turn out people you already have for you, 50% of both? How does a campaign think about that?
Well, it sort of depends on who you are in this case and which campaign you are. So some interesting things we found in the poll that we did, for instance, is that among voters who say that they've been contacted by one of the campaigns, so where the ground game has reached, Andrea Campbell actually does much better than she does overall. So it seems like her campaign is hitting the voters that or she's doing well among the voters that people that the campaigns think are going to turn out. If you're Kim Janey and you would do better if turnout was higher, then a turnout strategy might be more appropriate, for instance. So there's it really depends on which campaign you're running, kind of which of these strategies might be most beneficial.
And given that the top two winners in the preliminary go forward, does that figure into the strategy? You know, like I know in baseball in a game, seventh game, right, you might just throw all your pitchers in because there may not be another game. What about here?
Well, certainly the campaigns will be doing anything that they can at this point to kind of move on to the next phase. You know, there's some issues that you're seeing a lot of focus on, for instance, housing certainly being one. You know, voters are very focused on housing, they're telling us. You know, kind of the reaction, how each candidate's reacting to high housing costs. Education is one that we're seeing mentioned in the Suffolk poll a lot. And of course, the reaction to COVID-19 and kind of how to deal with that. You know, every issue these days is a COVID issue. So how the candidates are talking about that is also something that they're trying to use to kind of create some separation and some attention for themselves.
So WBUR reporter Simone Rios published a story today, Steve, about how voting by mail could potentially have an impact on the mayoral race, reach groups that have historically had a harder time accessing the electoral system. Do you think it could have an impact on our mayoral race?
That's a really interesting question, because that is certainly the hope of easy access mail voting, universal access to vote by mail like we saw in 2020. The reality, though, that we saw at least in 2020 is that it didn't really have that impact. At least it did not have that impact in 2020. So, you know, like you said, the aspiration is that it would expand the franchise and bring votes to people who didn't have them before. But what happened in 2020 is when you looked at where those votes came from, they were much more likely, those early votes came from, they were much more likely to come from wealthier, whiter, more well-to-do communities, you know, out west of Boston, for instance. You're thinking like Weston and Wellesley and so forth, where, and kind of that cluster, whereas the towns where you would hope to see more votes from, if that strategy were successful in expanding the franchise, they did not participate in early voting at nearly those same numbers. So maybe that'll change. You know, maybe early vote will become more familiar and will eventually have that impact. But what we saw in 2020, at least, is that it did not have the impact that advocates were hoping for or expecting.
All right. That is Steve Cazella, president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, let's turn now to that look at voter turnout. Some advocates are hoping that this year expanded mail-in voting rules could attract more voters. Here's WBUR's Simone Rios with more.
Lynn is a majority-minority city, but the mayor and most of the city councilors are white. Michael Satterwhite, a school committee member running for mayor, says that's largely because of low turnout in Black and Latino neighborhoods. But Satterwhite, who's Black, believes mail-in votes could bring out more Black and brown voters and help him get elected.
We have a population where multiple people work multiple jobs, so they might not have ample time to get to vote. So the mail-in ballot allows for voting to be accessible to people.
Election officials in Lynn expect 2,000 people to request mail-in ballots ahead of the preliminary election next week. Until recently, people in Massachusetts could only vote by mail if they were out of town or had another good excuse. But after the pandemic hit, state lawmakers decided to temporarily let anyone vote by mail. Those rules are set to expire in December. But some activists are pushing to make the changes permanent. That includes Mass Senior Action Council member Paulette Durrett. She says it's often difficult for seniors to get to the polls.
It's always been a transportation problem for them. Who's going to take me? What if it rains? There's just obstacles for senior citizens when it comes to voting.
Supporters say mail-in voting has already made a difference in Massachusetts. The state saw a record turnout in the last presidential election, and more than 40% of those votes were cast by mail. Still, advocates say fewer people know they can also vote by mail in local elections, like the ones coming up this month. That's especially in smaller cities where the races haven't generated as much news coverage. While almost 40,000 voters have requested ballots in Boston, Taunton has received a little less than 20. Janet Rowe, Lynn's election chief, has been pushing hard to get the word out about the new rules.
We've actually picked up a lot more students that way that are away at college now that they know they can just go online, download the application, email it back to us. So people love the mail-in voting.
State Republicans have expressed concern that mail-in voting could make it easier to cast fraudulent ballots. And not all Democrats are enthusiastic about voting by mail. Lynn mayoral candidate and city council president Darren Sir wasn't even sure mail-in was an option in the coming election.
I don't know if I support mail-in voting as much as in person. And I'm not saying I don't support it. I don't know. Never really given it any thought, to be honest with you.
But some advocates are betting the mail-in option will spur voting in communities of color. Across Massachusetts, blacks and Latinos voted a far lower rate than white voters. While 71% of whites turned out in 2020, only 51% of Hispanics voted, and just 36% of blacks. That's the lowest black turnout percentage in the country, according to data from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Doug Chavez is a Boston-based political consultant who specializes in mobilizing Latino voters. He says low turnout among blacks and Latinos is about class and education, but also disenchantment with politics.
They're not confident in the leaders coming through for them. They haven't in the past. Black and brown folks have been left behind economically, education, healthcare system. Look what happened during the pandemic. It blew up the disparities that exist in our communities.
But Chavez says mail-in voting could change that. The problem, he says, is not enough people know about the option.
I just wish they would have done a little more advertising or run a better awareness campaign. Some people weren't even aware that mail-in ballot was an option this year.
Last year, state election officials took significant efforts to encourage people to vote by mail in November, sending every voter an application. But the Secretary of State's office says it was too late to send similar mailings this year because lawmakers waited too long to extend the vote-by-mail rules. That means local officials are on their own to get the word out this election season.
WBUR's Simone Rios reporting that story. You can visit WBUR.org to check out our guide on voting in the Boston mayor's race and get a closer look at the candidates in Boston, plus some key races in other cities and towns. And then don't miss that special Radio Boston this Thursday night at 7, WBUR and Radio Boston, in partnership with the Boston Globe, WCVB Channel 5, and the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston. We'll bring you a 1-hour virtual debate live from WBUR City Space. All 5 major candidates will be there. You can find more details at WBUR.org/events.